Jesus the good teacher, Jesus the therapist, Jesus the giver of bling. The Issues Etc. book of the month for June is Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? 12 False Christs. It's written by regular guest Dr. Matt Richard. Read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or purchase Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? By calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? One of these races, a special election, the one that was held in Georgia, was the most expensive congressional race ever held. More money was dumped into it from various sources than any other congressional race. And it wasn't a long-term race. It was a special election to fill the seat of a U.S. representative who had gone to work in the Trump administration. Of course, there's also the South Carolina special election that went against the Democratic Party and for the president's party. Are either of these special elections that are catching so much attention here on this Wednesday afternoon, are they bellwethers for the 2018 midterm elections? Does it mean, as some are supposing, that President Trump actually has coattails, at least coattails now in the first few months of his term? Joining us to talk about these congressional election results in Georgia and in South Carolina, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard and a regular guest here on Issues Etc. Mark, welcome back.
Glad to be here as always.
We'll talk in a minute about how unexpected the results really truly are, but are either of these races, South Carolina or Georgia, bellwethers for the 2018 midterms?
Well, they call them special elections for a reason. You know, the circumstances that they occur in are not, because they don't occur typically during part of a broader election, are often very different. So it can be hard to extrapolate too much from these elections. You know, that said, you know, this could go either way. The result in South Carolina was unexpectedly close. It was a strong Democratic candidate. People weren't really paying a lot of attention to the race nationally, and the Democratic candidate sort of flew under the radar without a lot of criticism and came within, I think, 3%, or because it was a low turnout election, about, 2,900 votes possibly winning that. So in that sense, yes, clearly he overperformed. And to some extent, historically, Ossoff did overperform in this election. Looked at another way, he didn't get as high a level of support in this district as Hillary Clinton did back in November. So that doesn't suggest that people were terribly persuaded by Trump dragging down Republicans or anything like that, particularly considering that Democrats threw everything they had at that race. You mentioned it was the most expensive congressional election ever. Here's a mind-blowing statistic. They spent more money in that congressional race than Ronald Reagan did in his 1984 campaign, even adjusted for inflation.
Oh, man.
I mean, that is just staggering. Democrats threw everything they had in terms of resources at that, and they failed. So that's got to be really dispiriting. And then there's the secondary effect, which is to say that you look at a race like that, where the party apparatus threw everything it had at electing John Ossoff, it's going to be very hard for them to track quality candidates in the future to run in difficult races and difficult districts, because, a lot of the better candidates are going to look around at that and say, what chance do I even have of winning, if the Democratic Party can't win in a swing district like that, spending, $25, $30 million.
Why was the Democratic Party and its associates in Planned Parenthood Hollywood, why were they pouring so much money into Georgia?
Well, I mean, they really are looking for a moral victory. They really want some tangible thing that they can point to and say, aha, people are already turning on Trump. Trump is toxic. We need to, send a message to Washington that they need to, remember to cater to the priorities of Democratic voters, because if Republicans don't, they're going to lose seats. And thus far, they haven't, got any indication of that. And this is very interesting, because there was a lot of talk about, Trump being toxic and dragging down Republicans in these special elections. But the fact of the matter is that if you looked at Ossoff's campaign, he said very little actually about Trump, at least when he was advertising in the district as opposed to fundraising outside of it. And I think that was for a reason. I think that the Democratic polling and all that realized that Trump wasn't nearly as toxic as they thought, which is not to say there aren't people that probably have reservations about Trump, but they're not about to say, you know, I have reservations about Trump and I'm nominally Republican, but I'm going to turn around and vote Democrat all of a sudden. That's a big leap, you know, to go from, you know, I have concerns about Trump to I'm going to vote Democrat. And Democrats have not been able to persuade people to do that thus far.
For the media, this comes, of course, on the heels of pretty much a catastrophic miscalculation when it came to the presidential election. And I think I was up late last night because we were waiting the birth of our second grandchild, and I was perusing Twitter full of pictures of various talking heads sitting around at tables looking glum at the results coming back from Georgia and South Carolina. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, certainly, I mean, part of it is just simply that the media, you know, likes drama, you know, and it would be a big comeback story if the Democrats started showing some, you know, fighting spirit in some of these special elections. But, you know, part of it is obviously, you know, liberal bias in newsrooms. And part of it is also, again, this is another instance where they had their credibility invested on this. If you looked at the polling, especially in the Ossoff race, it was unbelievable. I mean, it seemed like every poll for weeks had Ossoff leading. Some of these polls had Ossoff leading by 8 or more points and, you know, Handel won by, you know, nearly 4 points. So, I mean, to say that the polls were wrong is, you know, a dramatic understatement. And this is, again, another time where the polls have been terribly wrong, and the media keep basing so much of their coverage based on these polls. And, you know, we've had a number of elections in a row now that show that there's, like, basically a clear liberal bias against Republicans, particularly at the congressional level, and the media just haven't adjusted to that reality. I mean, they regard polls as this sort of, you know, scientific, measure of public sentiment when, you know, they really are in a lot of ways little more than an educated guess about what's going to happen.
In the cold light of day this morning, the interpretation was coming from several fronts, and I want your reaction to several of those interpretations. One was simply several media personalities were saying, look, enough, Democratic Party, enough with your moral victories. You guys need to start learning how to win real electoral victories. What do you make of that reaction?
No, I mean, I think that's exactly right. You know, second place isn't even a set of steak knives in politics. I mean, you know, you lose. And, Democrats have been losing for a very, very long time. And they've been heavily invested in this narrative so long as they had Obama in the White House that they were winning. Obama was heading what they called this demographic, quote, coalition of the ascendant. And that may well pan out decades from now in terms of if you look at the demographics of the country. But the fact of the matter in the short term is that Obama presided over just a staggering, staggering loss of Democratic office holders. I mean, the 2010 midterm was the worst defeat for a major party since the end of World War II for Democrats. It just decimated them. You know, state houses that had been democratically controlled since the Reconstruction flipped to Republican. I mean, and again, you're starting to see this filter down to the lower level, like the congressional level, because, you know, when you lose, you know, thousands of legislative seats across the country, you know, be it in Congress or at the local and state levels, what that does is it completely wipes out your bench of, you know, candidates who might be, you know, otherwise making a name for themselves in the state, in lower political offices. So all of a sudden it's very hard to find, you know, good congressional candidates, you know, and I think part of the big problem we had here was that Ossoff was not a great congressional candidate. I mean, he was basically a progressive, was too liberal for the district that was trying to pretend that he wasn't progressive, and then the fact that he was also a carpetbagger, and not just a carpetbagger, I mean, a guy who couldn't even vote in his own district because, you know, that's how bad he was. So they need to focus on candidate quality. They also need to really, you know, think about moderating their message. The National Party has become so much in the thrall ideologically of a far left, you know, brand of elites that it's putting them in a precarious electoral position. I don't know if you guys followed or covered the controversy over the mayor of Omaha a month or two ago when they were electing the mayor of Omaha, and the Democratic candidate in the race, who had, you know, was nominally pro-life, and, you know, the national party leaders came out and supported him tentatively and then revoked that support because they were pressured from pro-choice people, and they just can't have that narrow and ideological test in places like Omaha or Georgia. They need to be able to run, for instance, pro-life candidates. They need to be able to run, you know, pro-Second Amendment Democrats, you know, and they just aren't in a position to do that. They are, you know, ideologically hidebound, and it's a real problem.
Planned Parenthood's reaction, and of course, since then, they've gone into their Twitter feed has gone into pink mode, talking about the Senate's vote on Obamacare and acting like these things didn't happen. But their initial reaction was, well, you know, we may have lost, even though we plunked so much money in there, but we lost by less than we should have, given how that district usually votes. What do you make of that reaction?
Well, you know, it's like I said, you know, it's, again, there are two ways of looking at it. You know, one, I suppose you could say, and in certain ways, that it does show Democrats overperforming. But again, you know, Ossoff didn't do as well as Hillary Clinton did back in November in that district. So, you know, I wouldn't be overly confident about the results. You know, I wouldn't necessarily be, you know, rationally pessimistic. Again, Democratic interest groups like Planned Parenthood, you know, threw everything they had at that race, every resource, every call center, you know, every volunteer going to knock on doors, you know, every television ad, and it got them nothing. And you mentioned Planned Parenthood specifically because, you know, this was, you know, sort of a, and again, it was another moral defeat for them because Karen Handel, recall, was the woman at the center of the Komen controversy when, you know, she tried to get the Breast Cancer Foundation. She was involved in trying to get the Breast Cancer Foundation from making their, you know, small annual donation for Planned Parenthood because they didn't want to, you know, offend Republican women to keep them from donating to breast cancer causes. So, you know, Candle very much had a target on her back from Planned Parenthood, and they weren't able to stop her.
So have we seen, at least in these two cases, that voters, because, of course, Donald Trump's approval ratings are not good, they're historically low, but are we seeing that voters are able to distinguish between President Trump and his party?
I think that's entirely accurate. I think that you can be a Republican and you can have serious reservations about Trump, but when it comes to electing someone from Congress, are you going to like completely abandon your principles to otherwise send a message with Trump? I mean, you know, Trump still has a, you know, very traditional Republican vice president. He put together a more conservative cabinet than anything we saw out of George W. Bush. I mean, there are reasons why if you have, you know, reservations about, you know, Trump's scandals or Trump's, you know, personality and temperament, that you can say, well, you know, I may not like what's going on here, but the idea that I would empower Nancy Pelosi in Congress, who has nothing in common with my values, you know, just doesn't make any sense. And in fact, you know, like I said, Ossoff made a point in his campaign ads of not saying too much about Trump because he knew it wouldn't be an effective message, whereas all of the Republican ads were tying Ossoff to Nancy Pelosi, who is in fact toxic in basically, you know, areas outside of, you know, liberal coastal enclaves in this country. And, you know, Democrats haven't quite woken up to that broader message there that, you know, they are more controversial and outside the mainstream than they realize, given that there's a very sort of asymmetric media system in this country that, you know, portrays Trump, you know, as, you know, extreme beyond extreme, you know, even though he's a former Democrat, but Nancy Pelosi is just, you know, another mainstream American politician, you know, worthy of support.
So two final questions. Does this mean Nancy Pelosi might be in trouble if her name is something of a poison pill?
You know, I've been, wondering about that forever. Clearly she's done, I think, a not very good job of running the party. You know, she presided over the terrible defeat in 2010, and, you know, you would have thought people would have gotten rid of her then, but, you know, the Democratic Party just keeps foundering, and Nancy Pelosi just keeps holding on to power. So I have absolutely no idea other than to say that they are not well served by having both her personally in charge in terms of her own leadership skills and who she is and what she represents as a, you know, progressive San Francisco congresswoman who is far to the left of, you know, the average American by quite a ways.
Finally, then, what do these special elections teach by way of lessons for either party with regard to strategy going forward into the midterm elections in 2018?
Well, I think that these elections point toward a couple of things, which one is that everyone needs to focus on campaign fundamentals. They need to focus on having a good message, having good candidates, and, you know, simply running, you know, good, solid races. You know, it's not going to be that you come in there with, you know, a howitzer stuff full of cash and you just, you know, threaten votes out of people. People are largely inured to the kind of, you know, over-the-top politicking we've been seeing in recent election cycles with all the money being thrown around. And so I think that people just need to get back to basics in terms of, you know, giving people an attractive, you know, honest message that is actually persuasive rather than, you know, simply bombarding them all the time.
Folks, you can meet Mark Hemingway and his wife Molly at the Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. They're going to be making the case for religious liberty and making the case for Christians engaging the media. Registration for the conference is open. You can learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. It's the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest. He's a senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, it's time to talk about Islam and democracy. Are these two things, one a political system, the other a worldview and a religious system, are they compatible with one another? Dr. Adam Francisco will be our guest, Associate Professor of History and Political Thought at Concordia University, Irvine, California.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. Eighth Century. The Fourth Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals, or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has you covered. Check out the June and July issue of the Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Risen Savior Lutheran Church, Basser, Kansas. Located just right outside the northwest corner of the metro Kansas City area. We have a growing congregation of people who come from over 13 different communities to see what God is doing here, who desire to only believe, teach, confess, and practice as the church always has. Risen Savior, Basser, Kansas. Check out our website, risensaviorlcms.org.